football on Off the Ball.
Sometimes I think big teams overlook the importance of having a top keeper, and there is a difference with having a top keeper than a very, very good keeper.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
You're very welcome to the Racing Pod. It's Johnny Ward standing in for John Duggan, who did such sterling work over the 4 days of the Leopard Sound Festival, two of which involved Tom Malone. And Tom joins us in studio today, and later on we're going to be joined by Dave Kellner from our sponsor, William Hill. And there's only one place to start that Christmas of racing. Cold weather, bumper crowd at Cheltenham yesterday, beating one of the festival days. Bumper crowds at Leopardstown. Sometimes I feel in racing we kind of overplay crowds when they're not necessarily that big, but it was heaving the place. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you feel bad for people who have to market racing, because they're so often, they're just, just a hostage to the weather fortune, aren't they? But like, the weather was amazing. The racing, and I don't like to get into that everything is awesome sort of territory, but we were just saying it off air. Two was bouncing into the studio here to go, wasn't that a great Christmas race? And it really was. It had everything, you know. I know we kind of mentioned during the week as well, oh, is Willie Mullins out of form? Like, he still had like 12 winners or whatever. Gordon Elliott dominated. Henry de Bromhead still had his load of winners. As HRI remind us, loads of different owners represented. Plenty of syndicates having winners. Although, you know, Peter Lawler, as smaller trainers you're going to get, based down there in Wicklow, like him having a winner at a big festival. I thought it had a little bit of everything. And crucially, lots of high-class drama, high-class racing, and plenty of puzzles to kind of solve off the back of it. You know, a lot of the times when you go racing and things are just samey-samey and all the favourites win, and then we get to this stage of the year and we're like, oh, we got a 6-4 favourite for the Supreme, we got a 6-4 favourite there, we got, you know, everything is still completely up in the air. And I love that. Like, I don't know what my personal highlight is, but the King George is very difficult to top.
Yeah, I agree with Tom, because there are horses who've gone out in the betting for respective Cheltenham markets now, like Anzadam for 33s for the Champion Hurdle, little things like that I'm interested in. And that could be the main part of our show today, just kind of reflecting on Christmas and looking at some of the Cheltenham markets. And Dave will also look at the 247 at Cork, which is the Beginner's Chase sponsored by Hills tomorrow. And we'll have the Veterans Chase and the big one at Naas, the odds of which have changed by virtue of the jockey bookings, actually, because Paul Townend is riding the one the bookies didn't initially think would be favourite. We might start with the King George, Tom, because I watched that race with my future father-in-law, who basically was on
Bambridge.
Bambridge, and I was on. I hadn't a bet in the race, but I tipped the winner. And like, this is why racing. You've half of an 8-runner field after 3 miles and a really, really stern jumping test, split by about 2 necks.
Yeah, it was fantastic, and my eye was drawn to Gaelic Grier kind of the whole way. I mean, he was ridden in a way to, as if they had some sort of doubt that he might get the 3 miles, which I didn't think there was any doubt.
Thought he'd be taken on up front, maybe.
Yeah, well, obviously, look, they knew that Ile France was going to go up front, so why bother burning petrol going with him? As it turned out, Ile France didn't go too hard in the end. He just went a good grade one pace, but not exceptional.
Looked How like did Gaelic Warrior jump?
He jumped okay. Yeah, he jumped well in the main. And I thought he was really looming to make a challenge. My eye was just so drawn to him. The thing about it, the Jukebox Man probably touched down third at the back of the last and won. You know, and I thought Gaelic Warrior, when you look at the inside angle as well, he was staying on all the time.
Whip issue for Paul Townend as well.
Yeah, but like, he just seemed to be crying out for the trip. You know, a real genuine 3-miler. And I know Rich Ritchie always wants Paul Townend to ride his horses, so that probably takes him out of the Gold Cup picture a little bit. It's one of those things he's kind of, it's been ongoing for the last couple of years. You know, you have with Lossiemouth as well, where he would always pick State Man over him in a champion. But I thought the Jukebox Man was absolutely brilliant. You know, Bambridge, you felt like that was his day. It was unlucky, just a little bit unlucky, outbattled in the end. But the first and the third, the Jukebox Man has to go for the Gold Cup, lights up the Gold Cup picture from a speculation point of view as well, doesn't it? You know, that Gold Cup picture now, you know, what the Galloping, will the Galloping Deschamps, he should improve for it, you would imagine. But
well, on the Leopardstown race, and I know the way you're thinking, out to 6, maybe even 7-1 for the Gold Cup, he's another horse. I'd be of the opinion that there's probably an overreaction because I wasn't
massive overreaction.
Yeah, and you know, maybe he was initially 2-1 for the Leopardstown race in the betting and went off what sevens or whatever.
There is an issue there, and I think you were on another podcast where Paddy Flood brought that up. Like, it's okay to say, right, we only have one target, but you can't just pooch around for every other race.
Yeah.
Well, he was beaten 40 lengths. He finished last of the nine. So I don't know what, like...
I thought there was more to take from it than the John Durkin because I felt coming to the second last, he at least showed a bit of spark.
Yeah.
And Gavin Cromwell, so just looking at
his horses are not, you know, all the big trainers, he probably had the quietest, he would have had the quietest Christmas, I'd say.
Gordon Elliott last 14 days, I think it's had...
He's had 24 winners or something.
Yeah, 23 winners in last 14 days. And... at the top of the table right now, and he's obviously had to say, I've absolutely no chance to win the title. That is not true. Like, he has, you know, in the words of, I forget his name in Dumb and Dumber, there is a chance.
So you're saying there is a chance.
He has more than absolutely no chance, but I can kind of see where he's getting at, because he'd probably want to be so far clear of Willie at Punchestown, but at the moment, it's 2.3 almost, versus 1.5, give or take, Gordon versus Willie. But the stat that kind of struck me from the top five is that Gavin's at 9% this year.
Yeah,
and he has had a relatively quiet run for about maybe a month now. And maybe I know the way you're thinking when it comes to Cheltenham, the horse being better, Nick.
Yeah, perhaps. Look, Gavin is a high run rate, low strike rate trainer anyway.
Yeah, he has a lot of sort of handicappers as well.
He has a lot, you know, and that's just, so I wouldn't pay too much attention to that, but definitely he had a slightly quieter Christmas than he would have wanted. There's no doubt about that. With Gordon and the, I feel like Gordon Elliott paints himself as this kind of fella who you know, not doesn't care, but has sort of constantly saying, no, I'm not too fussed about that. I used to be really worried about that stuff, and I just don't buy that.
That's not true.
That is absolutely not true.
He will not rest easily until he's won a jockey's.
I feel like every...
He's from the pipe, you know, modus operandi.
I feel like every single season, he has a big reflection. Even you look at the way he campaigned his horses this Christmas versus last year, running to Yahupo versus not running to Yahupo last year, and it ended up getting beaten in a, you know, getting beaten in a stairs hurdle. I think he'll go bigger again. Like, he put all his eggs in a Cheltenham basket last year and it backfired spectacularly.
Have you ever looked more of a judge than your Tiopu appraisal? I was just, as he sauntered to the lead, this horse is finally not underrated by people. And you were spot on. And as you say, it was enterprising campaigning. Like, why not run him?
Yeah. And now, you know, and he kind of backed off the Dublin Racing Festival last year. I don't think he'd do that again this year. And especially if he's, you know, a million plus ahead and he could go in, you know, over 2 million ahead by the time we're rolling into Punchestown. You know, he could easily win an Irish Grand National. That's another huge chunk. He'll have, you know, 10 in the field there. Like, he probably has maybe slightly smaller numbers than he's had in the past, but he seems to have used his horses better over the course of the season, whereas, you know, in the past it was all, like, flat out going September, October, November, to the point they're peaking almost before Christmas, and you know, and then Willie just comes in and takes over. Whereas
if they're not peaking now, though,
gradual.
If they're not peaking in December, how is the rest of the season going to go for him?
But I think he still has lots of maidens, lots of pumper horses, lots of novices who are relatively lightly raced for the season. You know, he hasn't gone out and thrown an absolute truckload at those earlier festivals in the winter. You know, definitely seems like there's with Gordon again. He likes to paint himself as a fella, just kind of turns up and thanks everyone, and that's 100% not the case. Mm. And, you know, he's clearly reflects on everything. He's clearly more thoughtful about a lot of things he does and a lot more appreciative of his wins as well, it would seem. And, you know, it could be a huge year. It could be a huge year. And obviously, you know, us talking about it probably doesn't help him. He would absolutely not like people talking about him potentially being champion trainer. But he spoke about it an enormous amount earlier on in his career and has now deliberately kind of, you know, put a fire blanket on that. But no, he has a right chance.
Well, if he wants to be champion trainer, he'll need grade one artillery at Punchestown. That's the big thing. He'll have to have proper grade one horses. And Brighter Days Ahead looks like she's back into that bracket now. What did you make of... like, that Christmas hurdle was one of the most...
It was very strange, wasn't it?
It was strange. I suppose what I love about the Christmas, just to go over it again, there were more people at Cheltenham on New Year's Day than at one of the festival days last year, which would have been the Wednesday.
And considering on New Year's Day, they don't have the whole course open.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a total sellout. Like, they would have more
areas. They had, like, under 18s in for free. They did a couple of initiatives. But you look at Leopardstown. Like, I wasn't at Leopardstown. I was in Limerick. The crowds that were there. But what you were sort of referring to at the start, Tom, it's like there were... It wasn't the one trainer winning, and there were like going into the Christmas campaign, all the novice races, novice hurdles at Cheltenham, they had British trained favourites, which is incredible. Like, you just this yeah. shouldn't happen at all. So you had all these, you had hype horses in England. You had Sergino running, you had Noel Mead winning the race. You had Willie Mullins. You had Gordon Elliott. You had Henry de Bromhead. And what I love about it now is the Cheltenham chat. It's not 6-4 favourite for the Supreme, or will he or she run the. You have all
opinion.
Of these different things. And, like, yeah, should Anzadam have gone out so much in the betting? And I can absolutely see why this horse will never win a champion hurdle. But that race, again, it was like.
No, but he only has one target.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
You can't go and. He's too hot. You can't go and drop him back to a county. You know what I mean? You're lugging it welterweight around.
What did you make that race, and what did you make of Brighter Days Ahead?
Brighter Days Ahead, again, look, as often. It seems to happen with those two, doesn't it? That Brighter Days Ahead and Lossie Met, Paul Townend and Jack Kennedy kind of get involved in a bit of a personal battle. And I think, you know, a stronger gallop and Brighter Days Ahead can win. I'm not saying she would have won that day, because obviously Lossie Met had the benefit of the run. So I'd love to see the two of them go for the champion hurdle and take on Sergino, and like not have this nonsense talk. Oh, well, Sergino might go for the champion chase. Why on earth would you go for the champion chase and take it on, you know, Solness and Marine Nationale, who are, you know, clear, who will have him to the pin of his collar? I know he's a good jumper, but like, sure, you know, there's no State Man, there's no Constitution Hill, but now we have a genuine potential race there when you've got Lossie Met, Brighter Days Ahead, Sergino. You know, Dan Skelton completely talked down his horse yesterday. He's not going to drop him back to 2 miles, even though he looked like he might potentially be a champion hurdle horse. And Nick Luckin Racing TV certainly seemed to be trying to get Tom Stanley to ask him that question, but he poured cold water in it. But he'll probably head to Aintree. But Anzadam, you throw Anzadam in there, like he's definitely able to pick up fourth, isn't he? Like, from your each way perspective, Golden Ace. Still a chance she might go for
the... Of course, we did say Anzadam cannot be out of the first three at Leopardstown. Talk to me about that ride. At the time, I was thinking, okay, this adds a lot of colour to this race, because he's a bit free, kick him on, see where he's at, and his in-running price definitely shortened. So
yeah.
People online who should be making money from this thought that Anzadam, in doing what he did, had a better chance. I feel maybe one thing that we learned is he can't be ridden like this, because he found nothing.
Yeah, no, he didn't find very much at all. So look, that's obviously an issue in your 33-1 for Cheltenham as well. But I just feel like that market could cut up.
Do you see why Patrick did what he did?
Yeah, I can see why he did what he did, but you know, a massive amount. Sometimes you just have to ride your ace and hope a little bit, you know, if you can get a little bit loose. But as you see at Leopardstown, and particularly on good ground, like a lead at the bottom of that hill isn't as much use to you as you think it is. Mm. You know, you can just get caught.
Jumped so well.
Like, he did jump well, and he jumps fast. And
you want a champion hurdle with a strong pace. And him on the, I'm trying to think of Sublimity here, who was probably a similar price at this stage when he won the champion hurdle. You want this fast, like he's a typical keen authorised, but he was only beaten 6 lengths after it all. I don't think that was too bad of a run.
No, it wasn't. And just bear in mind as well, sorry, my old colleague there from the Irish Field did analysis of all of the 2 mile grade one races over the last 5 years. And on the day, only one has paid each way three places. So you're better off back in Anzadam now.
Who's your old colleague?
Mark Boylan,
yeah.
Yeah, in the Irish Field. He did an analysis of all these 2-year-old, two-mile grade one open hurdles, and they generally have between 4 and 6 runners. So if you are looking at a horse that has a clear target, like Anzadam, well, you're taking 33-1. About, you don't think he's going to win, but you know he's going to run, and you know, you're...
Okay, well, let's mention the aforementioned novice hurdlers, because Talk the Talk for me was one of the revelations of the festival.
Absolutely.
And
so
then
lucky.
You had the two hype horses, the two Walking the Park hype horses in Britain. One, My Daddy Paddy, I think it's fair to say. He's a bit of an enigma the way he travelled in the race, but was beaten. And then you have Paul Nicholls' horse, whose name escapes me, No drama this end.
No drama this end.
Being compared to Den Man, kind of, and then being compared, and whatever you make of this, I love this stuff. He's another walk in the
park. I love Paul Nicholls having good horses. I just love Paul Nicholls having good horses because one, he runs them, and two, he tells everyone how good they are, or he thinks how good they are. And you know, it's unfortunate that you know the Caldwell horse is he's lost him for the year, but you know, hopefully he comes back safe and sound and fine and have you know a chance to get his chest out again, but. But as regards things that are good for racing, for me, Paul Nicholls having good horses is right up the top of my list. The only horse I could compare to Denman over the course of the Christmas is 80 Calore. But again, we kind of mentioned
Final Demand, maybe?
Like Final Demand, yeah. There's a lot to like about him. I mean, Davy Russell was raving about him on the telly. He just loved absolutely everything. And the way he jumps and travels is just a kind of a joy as well. And he does everything kind of behind the bridle. So you never really know where you are with him. Look, and is there... You know, getting beaten in the Albert Bartlett, like, you know, so what? Like, you know, it's not... Or he got beaten in 2.5 mile race, didn't he? But, like, wouldn't worry too much about that. Like, he just looks an out-and-out chaser and potential Gold Cup winner in the future, you know? Very good horse. But again, we weren't served up much of a race, were we? You know... It was a school and gallop, which is a slight...
That was the one disappointment. The second favourite, obviously, didn't run any sort of race, but I do feel... Jimmy DeSoy, rather. I do feel that there was a bit of a salvation for racing the whole 4 days. It was like just everything about it.
And Kitzbühel as well.
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of nearly forgotten about him because he ran on the 26th.
That seems like forever ago.
Seems forever
His jump at the last.
But that just showed how much petrol he had left. I mean... You know, if you're to go into the technical aspects of it, you don't really want a horse doing that every day. You want him to come into the bottom and just brush his belly through it and maximise energy. But it's very entertaining to look at. And by the sounds of things, and judging by the reaction of Paul Townend and William Mullins, it's a very fun experience for Paul Townend too. Because, you know, when you have a horse that you just so much confidence in and you can see a stride from a mile off and you can just kick him in the belly and fire him at it and you know he's gonna do something good for you no matter what. Like, it's... It's just that contrast with, you know, you see someone like Constitution Hill has completely lost his bottle and everyone, you know, the partnership is so unnerved.
Yeah.
There's no confidence between horse and rider. Whereas in a situation like that, you know, it's such a good feeling as a rider when you're just like, I know, I just fire this lad at it and he's just going to come up for me. He's going to do something. It's fine. It doesn't matter. We'll get over the far side of it and we'll keep rolling, you know?
2 mile chase division then. I backed Marine National, which was one of those kind of bets.
But we still don't know what happened.
Me and Tom talked about this on our preview show over the Christmas. It's just, I do have an issue with the revolving camera because the revolving camera was kind of brought in for really foggy weather and it is an unbelievable saviour in that weather. But other than that, the revolving camera was not a help here at all because it's still how many lengths did Marine National lose? What actually happened? Because the comments in running and the race post say he jinked right. That implies that he has quirks. I'm not sure what happened. I didn't get a chance to talk to Sean Flanagan at Limerick, unfortunately. He didn't have a winner down there, but I didn't get a chance to talk to him because I did message Sean Flanagan on Instagram the day after or whatever, and he was basically just extolling the quality of the horse. But I just don't know what happened exactly. And I'm pretty sure he would have won otherwise.
I'm otherwise. Sure, you know, he's beaten, he's made an horrendous mistake. He's stopped to a walk. You know, he's clattered off another horse.
Well, I put it to you this way, right? Majborough and Zadam, and I know the way you're thinking, to name but three, are now in the kind of very divisive category after their performances.
Yeah, Factofile in there as well.
Maybe Factofile for certain. Gaelic Warrior is kind of is slightly enigmatic, but I think he ran a good race.
I definitely wouldn't have a Gaelic Warrior is completely still in the could be anything category and could easily, you know,
has
could
to
easily,
go right handed though, does he not, to be at his best.
I don't know.
I can't see him win the Gold Cup. Well, the amount of times you're jumping left, and what is it? 20 odd fences in the Gold Cup. But the Majborough is a really intriguing one because he has been, you know, he put three really bad performances together in terms of bad mistakes or jumping out to his left. He didn't really do that at Leopardstown.
No, he didn't.
I would take the positive from that.
But, like, I remember going to Fairy House almost exclusively to go and watch Majborough when in his beginner's chase, and it was just still one of those moments you're like, this horse is just going to be. This is the most magical thing. And then look, he's made a few mistakes in his novice career. He's made a few mistakes first time out. And then, you know, Mark Walsh is probably a hostage of fortune. He has to kind of sit and educate him a little bit and get him into the roots of the fences, and he's just popped away grand. But has that blunted what made him such an exciting horse? And
what's his trip?
There's maybe a touch of Andaso about him, is there? You know, is he a not quite Andaso?
I don't think he's as in, like, I think he's more amenable in terms of... Well, we don't know, you see...
We don't know yet, we don't know
what he did as a juvenile hurdler, and as you say, on his chase debut, like, there's still a, wow.
Yeah.
There's still definitely a, and he's physically so beautiful to look at.
Yeah, and he could still be maturing, you know, and, you know... There's an enormous amount of talent there. I think you probably have to, he just kind of has to go to the Ryanair, doesn't he? Like, just go to the Ryanair, and I'd love to see him run like so many of Willie's have done in the Ryanair in the past and just book out and make
it. Be another Factofile kind of
way. Yeah, Factofile, Alaho, Vautour, they all did it. You know, he, I'm not saying he's that good. He could be that good. I mean, when, like I said, on the back of his chase debut, everyone thought he was an absolute monster, and I'd love to see him combine the best elements of the runs we've seen from him so far, where he'll just be able to. But you never know. You know, are you able to take that risk with him? But that's you know, top class 2 mile, you know, quick jumpers. If he can just get out, he's got a lovely big stride. Lovely, let him out and roll. Like, think of the mistakes he made in the Arkell last year.
How did
and
he
yeah. still?
Yeah.
He was only beaten, you know what, four heads, really. Like,
I would say the disappointment for me was that wasn't a mad jumping test in a 5-horse race, and he still couldn't. How did he jump at Leopardstown from your perspective?
Well, he jumped well, but he was, you know,
I was looking back at to see if Marine National could somehow, because I'd given up on my bet, and I had a good bet in it at 5-2. I'd given up on it. And Jerry Hannon then says, God, he's actually still in contention. I was like, how is he still in contention?
Yeah, which suggests as well that they didn't go a mad gallop. But then again, I was in my star of Christmas, Sam Ewing. What a brilliant, like, literally got a phone call and got a little debrief from Joseph and JJ and like was like, yeah, here's what you do. And then executes the plan to perfection. You know, brilliant ride.
And he wrote Talk the Talk, who I thought was excellent as well.
Yeah, that was really unlucky. Watch that back again. He just... he's just kind of come down a little bit steeply, and the horse just can't get his second movement on his front legs, and you know, he just topples over. It happens.
One other horse we've got to mention in a similar, I suppose, a similar performance, and this does seem like a long time ago, because you mentioned Morat in the same race, just for 8-15, El Kairos was going to produce a pretty sensational performance, actually, and did produce a pretty sensational performance, all told. He was a 5-length. Fifth to Bambino Fever last year in the champion bumper, with Sartudo, who was seventh, who runs at Nace, against against a mare on Sunday, Diesel 10, whose form ties in with Bambino Fever. But El Kairos, I'm not sure where he goes next.
No, not sure where he goes, but you'd imagine he'll have to come back to the Dublin Racing Festival to get another run into him before the Supreme. But he looks a Supreme horse all over, doesn't he? Just such a big engine. He has that class, you know, he's got festival form from last year. He came from the David Maxwell dispersal, didn't he? Like, you know, classy horse. And those Keep the Dream Alive lads have some really nice ammunition to go to Cheltenham with. Because that's the other thing. Like, Bones on Fire, like, he's one of those horses that he could easily go to the Dublin Racing Festival, get beaten, and still end up at the Cheltenham Festival with a lively chance. In a, you know, he's the kind of horse that in a big field, you know, he'll charge on up the hill chasing something out in front, and he could end up there and win something. So I definitely wouldn't write him off.
Dave Kellner from William Hill joins us. Dave, what a Christmas, basically.
Yeah, it's been unbelievable, hasn't it? We've seen some absolutely sensational performances over Christmas. Think of Sergino, Narciso Haas, who I thought was so impressive over in Ireland as well. We had that incredible finish to the King George with the jukebox man just scoring from a Gaelic Warrior. And I thought it was an absolutely sensational Christmas spell. And obviously, our focus now turns to Cheltenham from a betting perspective with obviously loads of changes for the festival in March.
You brought up Narciso Haas there, Dave. What, has there not been a bit of an overreaction to, like, himself and Monge too? In Fairy House, there were nothing between them. The word on the street was that this JP Horse could not be beaten. The place was going mad for it. I know he's slightly on the show.
I just got to stop you. The word on the street and JP in the same sentence like just doesn't compute. But go ahead anyway, no, Bugsy.
Look, he was there. That's what. But they were, So it was. This was, a stonewall certainty. Then he got well beaten by Monge too, who's pretty much double the price from now in the triumph. So I don't know. I do hear you though. Narciso has been very, very impressive.
Yeah, I think he stepped up massively on that performance that he produced behind Monge 2 personally. And you look at the comparison, you look at the time comparisons from a similar race on the same day on the card. Narciso Haas has just put in a tremendous time figure. And I think that form will be reversed. It remains to be seen. I mean, we're betting right now, William Hill, Narciso Haas 5-1 for the Triumph Hurdle, with Monge 2 in there at 8-1. Maestro Conti is 8-1, 12-1. Matin Midier Soir, Proactif is 12-1, 14-1, and bigger the rest. My feeling is Narciso Haas has just stepped up markedly on that performance.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm sorry. I can't believe after the end of Cheltenham, I'm forcing you to run through the Triumph Hurdle.
Yeah, of all the races. Yeah, and to be fair, I tend to agree with Dave, though. I like Barbizon in that race, and he was absolutely floored by him.
Out of the way, wasn't he?
Maybe we'll start with the Gold Cup, Dave, just a brief look, because... I don't know. I mean, you could absolutely have 7 or 8 different opinions on what will win this race after what we saw at Christmas. And horses who shortened didn't win.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? You look at the makeup for this race. I think we'll get a ton of runners this season because it does look that open. It's 6-1 the field currently. Galopin Deschamps is 6-1 joint favourite with I Know the Way You're Thinking. And both these horses have massive questions to answer. I Know the Way You're Thinking, as Gavin Cromwell said after the race, was very, very disappointing. Galopin Deschamps bits whether at 10 years old he can regain his crown. I thought he ran reasonably over the festive period, Galopin Deschamps. Gaelic Warriors are going to be of interest at 8-1 because you think about the Ryanair chase and you think about the performances Gaelic Warrior and Factophile had to put in when they went head-to-head and toe-to-toe. I know they only raced for the final 3 furlongs, but that was on deep ground. And I just think maybe it left its mark, that race. And I think Gaelic Warrior and Factophile will both emerge at Cheltenham a lot fresher. And I expect them both, wherever they go, to put up massive performances. Gaelic Warrior likely in the Gold Cup, and Factophile, who I think is a fantastic price now for the Ryanair chase, because I think those two are two of the best horses, national hunt horses in training at the moment.
Factophile for the Ryanair chase. There's another, and I've said this before, I love having a bet where you go against the crowd because the bookmakers have decided that a horse just isn't what he should be anymore. And Factophile for the Ryanair. Are you...
Dave
makes a good point. That was the John Durkin was a very tough start to the season for both.
Yeah, it was a brilliant race. Mm. Absolutely brilliant race. And the one thing I would say about Factophile is that I wouldn't worry about Willie Mullins' horses not running well in the UK on Stephen's Day. Like, it kind of, it happens. I know, obviously, that he had the winner and Gaelic Warrior ran well, but... Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about Factophile. He can be a little bit in and out, can't he? Like, I mean, but I'm not against that shade. I mean, obviously, I've just pitched out Gaelic Warrior in the same race, but the two of them could be.
I think you're
Majmur
for that race.
Or Majmur, yeah. But like, sorry,
maybe the three of them will turn up in the Ryanair.
But there, I mean, you got Majmur there doing like they could run similar styles. Yeah, I'd love. I'd love Gaelic Warrior to go in the Gold Cup, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Imagine how the heads will be wrecked of certain trainers when journalists are going to be calling them every day over the next few months. What race is this going to run in? Or have you made up your mind? There's been a move on the exchanges. What about the Champion Hurdle, Dave? Because...
Yeah, well, it's all about one horse now, isn't it? The Champion Hurdle, really. We were 4-1, Sergino, prior to that romp over Christmas. We went 2-1 in the immediate aftermath of the race, then went 13-8. We've had to cut 13-8 into 6-4 now.
Wow.
So 6-4 favourite for the Champion Hurdle this far out, which seems a really short price to me. Lossy Mouth and the New Lion both 4-1, and it's 16-1 bar that trio. That brings in Golden Ace, Constitution Hill, Brighter Days Ahead. Anzadam's in there at 20-1, 25-1, and bigger the rest. I don't know what they'll do with Anzadam, but I think he's going to be better suited to quicker ground in March, offer stronger pace. I don't know if he's anywhere near good enough at 20-1, but I think that 6-4 on Sergino looks short to me, and I'd much rather Lossiemouth at 4-1 right now. But I guess the danger with that is Lossiemouth could easily be rerouted to the mare still.
Constitution Hill and Brighter Days Ahead are like fancy prices for a race that they basically had between them, seemingly, in the betting last year.
Yeah,
that's fantastic. Like, it just shows this.
Hold on. The new line is completely forgotten about. 1-4, and he's like 4-1. It's like, well, you know, he didn't find a leg at the back of the last in the fight in fifth, and he goes and wins the fight in fifth on the bridle by 20-odd lengths or whatever, you know, and still. Yeah, I know, obviously, you need to jump to win, but.
Okay.
You think he was going that well in the fight in fifth, though?
Yeah, I thought he was.
You thought he was, yeah.
I think it was almost too early to tell, but we won't maybe have time to talk with the Stairs Hurdle today and Tom's beloved Tiopu. Tiopu, when you think about it, he's one of the most reliable, likable horses that you could possibly van to do it. But the Champion Chase picture, Dave, again, is very, very much, it's smudged by what we saw over the 4 days.
Yeah, Marine Nationale is a slight favourite here at 5-2. Barry Connell, obviously confident. Elite Tomp is 11-4. Madgeborough, 7-1. Sergino won't run in this, 10-1. Solness is 16s, along with Factor File and Loda Sud, and it's 20-1 and BLRS. What do you make of this? Because it was a good comeback from Marine Nationale, but Elite Tomp was so impressive when slamming John Bon over those railway fences at Sandown.
I'm of the opinion that Marine Nationale is a more talented horse than Elite Tomp, but I feel in terms of, you know, I backed him at Leopardstown because I thought he had his ground. Like, they're not rubbishing us with his prep and all of that. No. And I just think it's harder for the second season horse to just come in and beat him. But at the same time, he's 5-2. I mean,
yeah,
I'm not sure I'm jumping
that
about that. He was 5-1 last year or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, he's a deserved favourite, isn't he? Elite Tomp has been excellent, but I'd nearly say at 11-4, he's a little on the short side. You'd prefer him to be a little clearer second favourite, I would think. At 5-2 Marine Nationale versus 11-4 Elite Tomp, I'd be with Marine Nationale, because he's been there, he's done that, he's brilliant course form, and you know, although Elite, there's no one more underappreciated, it feels, really, than Elite Tomp.
Okay, here's my lucky 15 anti-post at this stage. Horses who've generally gone out in the betting. I know the way you're thinking in the Gold Cup. Romeo Coolio, we didn't really mention in the Arkle, and I can absolutely see why he's gone out in the betting, especially the fact that he's taken on the Lambam Cup back to boards. I'm also going to go with Anzadam, the Champion Hurdle, and the third one is actually Bambino Fever for the Mare's Race. Sorry, the fourth one is Bambino Fever for the Mare's Race. She was beaten on her season return, but I cannot see her running anything else. In the back of your mind as we're doing this, come up with a lucky 15 for the end of the show.
Okay, great.
We still have three races this weekend because the carousel, just before Christmas, I think there were 5 days off in Ireland, which I can't actually remember the last time this happened. We just had a stretch of no racing, but the carousel continues. We did have today off, but we do return the weekend, Mallow tomorrow, and Nace's big day on Sunday, and it looks like, fingers crossed, because they've had so many, have so much bad luck. And Ian Balding has just passed away, by the way. Our condolences to all his family. Ian Balding, a genuine legend of the game and a legend in terms of the lineage, 87 years of age.
So that Mill Reef,
The legendary trainer of Mill Reef. So that's just come true at age 87. But this weekend, hopefully Nace, because they've had no luck with the weather the last 2 years, hopefully they'll be fine on Sunday. And the veterans at Sandown, Dave, tomorrow. We might start with that. There's a good contest system in terms of prize money. The 305, the veterans handicap chase. What are we betting in this?
We might have lost Dave.
Okay, we'll bring you in on this, Bugsy. We'll get Dave back, get him in terms of... Dave is back. Come back in, Dave.
Yeah, I'm back now. Apologies. Lemilos is 100-30. Gustavian is 7-2. Credo is the market mover for Anthony Honeyball. That one's 13-2 into 11-2. Nocte Velatus is 6-1. Copperhead is 8-1, along with Ansam. And it's 14-1 and Bigger the Rest. With each way extra, you can get four places as well on the 305 at Sandown with William Hill. I like the Badger Beers winner, personally, Gustavian, who wind surgery. I thought that was a good run at Wincanton on his latest start. He's 7 second in the marking. He's my idea of the winner.
What do you like, Tom?
I love Lemelos. I know he's just kind of dropping down the weights now. And I love these old veterans chases. I mean, you saw it with like Favre Deschamps do as well at, you know, at Leopard's End. Just because a horse gets to 10 years of age doesn't mean he should be written off. And in fact, you know, there was a time when you wouldn't expect horses to mature until they're 6, 7, 8. So I love these. I think it's a great initiative. I like Lemelos. He's definitely, look, he's a quirky one. But Dan Skelton's an excellent trainer, and he does seem to be the kind of fella who thinks long and hard about campaigning his horses. And, you know, he's gotten this fella around the place, and, you know, he's a previous course and distance winner. He's down to a mark of sort of 140 here now. So, yeah, I think, you know, he's top weight, but he might be a little bit classier than some of these.
Brian O'Connor had an article in the Irish Times today kind of bemoaning trainers, bemoaning prize money situation, and then referring to training fees. And generally, it's just not a good idea to buy a racehorse and put him or her in training unless you can afford to lose the money. And I think that was Brian's point. But I actually do feel there can be a bit of value buying veterans, because they're probably considered a bit over the hill, but they're eligible for those races.
They're eligible for those good races. Pots. And also, you know, if they're a good jumper, you know, they might just fall into a decent handicap chase one day.
Yeah.
And as well as that, if you're a syndicate, You need to get out. You need a horse that's going to be able to run regularly.
Yeah.
You can't have a situation where, oh, we're going to run in September and then we're going to run at Christmas and then we're going to run in March. And like, that's not going to keep a group of 10 or 12 lads happy, maybe 6 or 8 of them who are not, you know, massively familiar with the ins and outs of horse racing. You need a horse that can run at least once a month and sort of keep everyone happy, so they're happy enough to keep paying into the pot and, you know, having a day out. And that's kind of the key to it. So, you know, horses, like you said, those veterans, maybe they've had 2 or 3 seasons over fences, and maybe they, you know, they're not quite graded, but they're trickling down through the weights. Certainly an opportunity, you would think.
We'll get Bugsy's charity bet at the end of the show, before which we'll also talk about the big one at Naas. But the William Hill Each Way Extra Challenge Series Beginners Chase, the train gets off the track in Mallow tomorrow for the 2:47. What's the betting here, Dave? I actually like Rowdy at 10-1. You just have to forgive him his run at Limerick.
Yeah, he looks a decent price at 10-1. He's been clipped in from 12-1 when this market opened. It's wide open, and we're not really taking a betting angle on this race just yet. 4-1 the field, co-favourites of 3 currently. Mount Shenshan, Lacalle's Diamond, and Kelly's Corner are all 4-1. Live to Laugh has been clipped in from 8-1 to 13-2. Snow Punt is 13-2, and it's 10-1 Rowdy. Call to MCG is also 10-1, 12-1 and Bigger the Rest. So it's really open race, this one. But yeah, I wouldn't put anyone off Rowdy at 10s.
When Eugene O'Sullivan ran 2 in the race at Fairy House the 21st of November, and that was the day where his nephew Michael was honoured in the race with Lorna Brooke, and Alan won that particular race. But he said, I asked him, how will the man in the Anorak get on here? And he said, no, we basically said we've 2 in it, don't rule out Rowdy. So that struck in my mind when he ran in Mallow the following day, and he was touched off a neck in a 24 runner race. So I was fancying him at Limerick, and he turned into the straight in Limerick, and he just had what looked like an off day. But he's run 7 times in points, so he's race fit, he's at his local track. I feel if he runs the race he ran in Cork, he'll be hard to beat. Do you like Anthony in it? It's a tricky one.
Yeah, it's a very, very tricky race. And yeah, look, I wouldn't be against Rowdy either. It's just, yeah, it's a very, look, these races, they're not the kind of race that I personally get stuck into. You know, obviously Lacalle's Diamonds got on the premises last time out, but yeah, it's very tricky. And look, if you have a strong opinion on Rowdy, I'd happily roll in with that, because I certainly don't have a strong opinion on it.
Naas's big one of the year is the first Sunday of the year, and the Ballymore Novice Hurdle, which is at 2:25 at Naas on Sunday. Dave, this was interesting, because I think the betting has changed here since jockey bookings, quite markedly, actually.
Yeah,
massive change in the betting. I'll spin you through this. Sol Tudo was as short as 11-8 to win this before the jockey bookings were announced, but Paul Townend has seemingly chosen Sembacco, and Sembacco was as big as 4-1 after Dex has gone 7-4 now. So they've flip-flopped at the top of the betting, basically. Sembacco is 7-4, so Tudo is 100-30. Classical Creek is 4-1. I'll sort that 8-1. 17-2 Lord Rouge. Fruit de Mer 16-1. 18's and bigger the rest. What was interesting as well was that Sol Tudo was the one that was backed in from 16-1 to 10-1 for the Turners prior to this race, before the jockey bookings were announced. That one's back out to 14-1 for that race in March, where Sembacco's into 10-1. So if the jockey, if Paul Townend's got it correct, Sembacco will be beating Sol Tudo. 7-4 Sembacco now, Sol Tudo in the betting at 100-30.
Yeah, I was in Mallow when Sol Tudo made his seasonal return under Danny Mullins. He was taking on Jalan Dodaro, his good horse who hadn't run in a good while. But what was strange for me was that I think Willie's been talking about him as an Albert Bartlett horse, but he had a hood on over 2 miles. But he was fine. Like, again, yeah, he's authorised. He was fine. I wouldn't be that worried about him getting 2.5. To be honest, I probably thought Paul Townend would be riding Sol Tudo. I actually kind of half fancy Switch for Diesel. Again, this is another race where we've at least 8 runners. It makes it so much more interesting.
So much more interesting.
So much more interesting. So you can have an each way bet. And the Lawlers often has, or it used to be called the Lawlers, but it often has a short price favourite you can kind of take on for various reasons. Switch from Diesel has been nibbled at as well. I do quite like her at the prices. But Anton could win this, really.
Yeah, anything. I'd be quite strong on Classical Creek.
Wow.
Because
stable form, a bit of a concern,
He's only had 23 winners in the last couple of weeks, but it's also a race that Gordon Elliott definitely targets. You know what I mean? He, like, you know, and his novices are absolutely flying, because whole yard's flying. He can win with a cat at the moment. But look, Classical Creek, you think it, like, it was Ginto a few years ago, unfortunately, broke down in Cheltenham. You know, he's won this race a good few times.
Over Diane, Envoy Len.
Like, he loves this race.
Yellow clay last
and this
year.
This is a you know, the typical sort of, you know, one like that is the high class bumper form, you know, won as he liked last time out in Navan.
And you're getting an each way price.
You're getting an each way price. I think when you see prices flip on a jockey booking, then you know you shouldn't really have a 6-4 favourite. You know that there's not a mass amount, because, and it's not the trader's fault, it's not anyone's fault. Mm. You know, you're only judging maiden form a lot of it, really. But Classical Creek, again, looking at, he's coming out of a maiden. You'd hope he's okay, but you can't say anything wrong with the form of the yard. Jack Kennedy's picked him from a handful. He hasn't gotten too many wrong over the last couple of weeks. So I just like Glasgow Creek. I don't think he'll look past McGordon Elliott.
It's been great having, it's been great being back in the studio. Great hearing from Dave again, and great having Bugsy on. We had so much fun over the Christmas, and I'll reiterate this, like, the racing carousel can bring you down. There's a lot of kind of reasons to be negative about stuff, and there's always something to moan about. It was just sport, and it was fantastic. I loved it. I loved the 4 days. I loved the fact that I felt like I was looking forward to Cheltenham again, which maybe wasn't the case the last couple of years. It is time for your charity bet, though. Let's pick out something good.
Yeah, no, I'm going to keep it simple. We will stick with the big race at Naas, now sponsored by Ballymore. Hopefully we don't lose it to Frost. Obviously, the way they've reassessed the card, it should be fine. But we'll stick with Classical Creek for Gordon Elliott and Jack Kennedy. Classical Creek to win.
And Nifty at fours, are you going to go? Nifty at fours, Dave. How's that?
Straight up.
Yeah, sounds good to me. By the way, your ACCA for Cheltenham, that lucky 15, 5,291-1 currently. That one you mentioned, Johnny.
I thought it'd be a little bit longer than that as well. Yeah. As the old pun goes, you know, that means that if you put €10 on that, you lose €10. Yeah. But honestly, look, have a good look, right? If you've nothing to do over the next few days, if you're like on dry January, or you're just like, I need to get away from it all, have a look. I need to get away from it all. Go on your laptop and look at Anti-Post Market. Have a look at the horses that have gone out and try to make a case for them and see in your mind, could that horse be way, way shorter? In, as Bugsy says, it could even be a 6-horse race and you're getting 3 places at 33s or whatever come the day. Dave, thanks a million.
Thank you. William Hill, by the way, first bookmaker to price up all 28 Cheltenham Festival races.
Okay. Had to get it in. He had to get in. There we go. What's a 28 runner rack in a lucky something?
Yeah. Well, here, I'll give you a Trixie. How about a Trixie?
Okay, here's a Trixie.
Cheltenham Trixie, right. We'll go Majborough in the Ryanair. We'll go Cocktail Diving in the 2.5 mile handicap chase for novices. Yeah. What's that called? It used to be the Juicing Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go Monge 2 in the Triumph. So there's a little each way treble or Trixie.
Dave might not have time to put together the odds.
That's fine. That's fine. We'll forgive him that. But yeah, Majber in the Ryanair, Cocktail Diving in the Novice Chase, and the Novice Handicap Chase, and Munch 2 in the Triumph.
So while you're there, what price is Majber in the Ryanair? Because that's something that not many people, Dave, would necessarily be thinking about. I can absolutely see the logic for it. I mean, I'd say that is a decision that will be left late. Dave, what price is he?
10 to 1.
Interesting. There is a caveat. He may not run.
Yeah, he may not.
And he may do whatever. But Munch 2, Rodney. Munch 2. That was great. Thanks for coming in, Bugsy.
You're very welcome. Yeah. Good to be here. Happy New Year.
Yeah. And thank you, Dave.
Thank you. Thanks, chaps.
Cheers, Dave.
So that was the Racing Pod. So take our advice. You know, get away from it all. Get on your laptop and look at Cheltenham markets for the next few hours. See you next week.
The Racing Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.